This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you, no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are men and women around you who have done incredible things for the sake of our freedom. And we want to preserve the stories of our veterans. We want to honor them for their service and sacrifice and make sure that we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. So each week we visit with veterans from our greatest generation. And today we're in Delano, California. For nearly 70 years, our guest today, Bob Bauer, has lived here. But growing up, you were up the road from here a little bit in Visalia, California. What was that like growing up there in the 1930s?
Well, there was plenty to do. We were growing up during the Depression, so we didn't have a lot of money to do a lot of things. But we found ways to do things that didn't require an awful lot of money. As soon as I was able, I became a wage earner to some degree, so all of my needs were pretty well taken care of, and I was able to help out with the funds necessary to raise the family. I was raised by a single mother who with myself and two brothers, so we didn't have an easy time of it, but we managed to enjoy it.
And we're going to hear about your exploits as a naval aviator in World War II. Your two brothers, did they end up serving during World War II as well?
They were both into the service. One was discharged for medical reasons. The other brother, who did a lot more flying than I did when he was younger, and actually was trained to fly gliders that were going to be used in Europe. I don't know all of the reasons, but for some reason or other, he never did make it over to Europe. He did depart from the Army and became an instructor for Army pilots in Visalia at the Sequoia Airfield, best as I remember. So he was a pilot instructor all during the balance of the war.
Well, who knows how many pilots he impacted in that role. And you mentioned that you became a wage earner early on. Now, my first job was delivering newspapers, and I think you did that too, huh?
Exactly. I did newspaper delivery for the Visalia Times Delta on a bicycle for 4 or 5 years. After that, I became the distributor for the San Francisco Chronicle for the towns of Visalia and Exeter and Tulare. So every morning I faithfully got up, delivered papers to those towns and to our customers there. This went on for probably 3 or 4 years until I left for the service.
Now, you talk about delivering newspapers on a bicycle. Would you ride all the way up to the porch and leave it there, or would you throw it from the curb? Did you have that accuracy down with your forehand and your backhand?
I could do pretty well after a little practice. I was a slow learner, but once I got the hang of it, I could pretty well put it where they wanted to. I didn't get too many complaints.
You never threw it on the roof like I did to Mr. Baird back in Los Banos, did you?
To my knowledge, no. I probably put a few in the bushes and other places that were hard to find, but no roofs.
So you graduated high school there, Visalia High School, in 1937, and you continued on in the newspaper business after that. When did you get that flying bug? What was the first thing that grabbed you about aviation?
I think it probably was maybe a little bit envious of my brother who actually went to the Visalia Airport, did work out there, cleaned planes, and did other things just to get lessons for free, in essence. And when after I went 1 year to Visalia Junior College, then stayed out a year to work, and then decided when the government made an offer of flight training for junior college students, I went back to school to finish my second year of junior college, mainly because of the ability to take flying lessons and get a pilot's license.
And before all that, something happened that changed Visalia and changed California and changed the world a little bit. And I like to ask every veteran about December 7th, because it seems everyone who is alive has a specific memory of that day. I'm sure you spread the news to a lot of people through the newspaper about the Pearl Harbor attacks, but do you remember how you found out about what had happened out there in Hawaii?
Well, I could well remember December 7th. On that particular day, my mother and my two brothers and a friend of ours went to Bakersfield to visit with my aunt, who was a teacher there. Her father was living in a house in the back from where she was living, and while we were having dinner, he came in to let us know that he'd had his radio on and that Pearl Harbor had been bombed. And that was how we knew about it. We knew that this was something big and that the ramifications were going to be with us for a long time. So we didn't affect our day other than we went back home and carried on after that with the difference that we knew that having an imminent war coming on was going to make some difference in how we lived from there on.
Yeah, and as you shared, a little less than a year later, you decided to join the military. If you want to be a pilot, the Navy wasn't the only way to go. What made you decide that Navy was where you wanted to be?
Well, as I recall, one of my friends in junior college actually became a naval officer. I don't know exactly how it was, and I liked the way it looked, and I had never had any contact with the Navy before, but I figured I had had my flying, I liked flying, I thought I'd like to give it a shot, and so I went through the procedure, and it was a lengthy one of becoming a Navy pilot.
Did you realize you were going to have to take off and land from moving targets called the aircraft carriers?
Oh, yes. I'd read a lot about it, and I knew that it was that everybody wasn't going to make it, but I was going to give it a good shot.
And I know you are very active today at 94, and you're up on everything that's going on in the world, and you have a son who was in the Navy, a grandson who's a graduate of the Naval Academy at Annapolis, so you're hip to the room when it comes to the way the Navy operates today. How big a contrast is there to carrier operations in 2014 compared to 70 years ago?
Well, I can only gauge that by what I've seen in the movies and on documentaries of how the Navy operates now. And believe me, it's an entirely different world. It has to be 360 degrees to the opposite.
Well, I'm sure you made a few 360-degree turns and loops in your planes that you flew during World War II. And early on, you trained in dive bombers. Does it take a special mentality and special kind of chutzpah to fly a dive bomber?
Well, probably. It was, you had to have great faith in your airplane because in all of our training, which of course is all I did as far as dive bombing goes, was training, but it was extensive and you had to dive on targets and you had to hit and you just hope the plane held together, and of course you knew that they probably would, but we had I had a few that were along with me that, you know, that didn't make it, so it was not a piece of cake, but it could be done.
And the guys that I've spoken to who flew in those planes talk about those moments where they would black out, where you finish the dive and you're pulling up and you black out, and then hopefully you wake up soon enough to know where you are and be able to do what you need to do. Did you experience those kind of lapses of consciousness?
No, I never did. You could feel the pressure. You could feel what it was like it. But as far as it affecting my ability to continue to think, as far as blacking out, if you want to call it that, no, I never did do that.
Just got a little gray?
You could feel the pressure and feel the drain of the blood from your head. Yes, you could feel it, but I was able to live with it.
And I guess your first landing on a carrier probably wasn't the best omen for you. Didn't give you the most confidence that you could do this for a while out there. Tell me about that first experience trying to land on a carrier.
Well, that's one that you don't forget. We were on Lake Michigan on the Navy converted oiler or some sort of thing or other that they converted into an aircraft carrier just for the purpose of newly commissioned pilots learning how to land on a carrier. My first one was in an SBD. I made the landing safely, but as my tail hook dragged the wire, it hit a tie-down mechanism that was a steel girder across the deck, and the wood had been chewed away, and my hook happened to hit that steel implantation, and it tore my hook off. So my first landing resulted in me putting the plane into the crash barrier. But I survived all right. The plane had to have a new prop, but that was about it.
And when something like that happens, do they give you a hard time about it? Do the other pilots or your instructors heckle you or harass you?
No, there's occasions when they can do that, but on something like that your landing is perfectly normal, and it's just one of those things that nobody can avoid. There was no repercussion from it, no. No, there's occasions when they can do that, but on something like that your landing is perfectly normal, and it's just one of those things that nobody can avoid. There was no repercussion from it, no.
You just described a landing as normal. I thought there was no such thing as a normal landing. Was everyone different for you?
Well, they do become routine. You become, they caution you not to become too complacent about them, that everyone is a potential danger, but they become so routine that you really don't think that much about it. It becomes routine, and you just hope for the best.
And you trained in those dive bombers, the Dauntless and the Helldiver, but you're combat came exclusively in a plane that there aren't too many guys left who flew them, the F-6F Hellcat. What was your first impression of that airplane? What did you like about it?
Well, the first impression, I had flown F-4Fs, a fighter plane, in a training before, and the F-6F was just an easy plane to handle. In other words, you could tell what it was going to do, and it would pretty well do what you wanted it to do. It had adequate speed. It was a heavy plane, but it flew nicely, and it was nice to handle. It was a great plane.
When you'd been training for a while and you'd experienced all these different airplanes, but there's a war going on this whole time, was there part of you that was itching to get overseas, or were you content to keep training around the States?
Well, you kind of knew the procedures that you had to go through. A lot of people trained and probably never did get into combat. So it was a case of when you're in the service or in a war, you kind of take one day at a time. So you really figure, well, you do your best to do what you can do, and you hope that things are going to work out the way that you'd like them to work out. I was hoping to be able to get in to see some action. I really was. I trained an awful lot, and I trained for that. So my feeling was I'd like to experience that also, come what may.
And a lot would come, and there are some moments that you came pretty close to not coming back and joining those more than 400,000 Americans who didn't come home from the war. Before we get to some of those, tell me about the journey to the war zone, heading out to the Pacific. Do you remember what your state of mind might have been or what that felt like for you?
Well, I know we departed from San Francisco Bay. My family was kind of there. They knew we'd be passing underneath it. And what they said they waved to me is our ship. I was actually on an aircraft carrier that had been repaired and was going to Hawaii. We knew we were going to the islands to do some more training before we went into combat. It was not like a cruise ship, but, I mean, things weren't that bad. As I say, I got familiar with a carrier without even having to land or take off on one by our 5 or 6 days, I forget what it was, voyage from San Francisco to Honolulu. So that was my first experience on a carrier, but that was just a passenger.
And your first taste of combat came where?
My first taste of combat, we knew we were going to do it. We were involved with the preliminaries before the invasion of Iwo Jima, and part of that included the Navy taking part in attacks on the island of Japan itself to do as much as we could to neutralize any of their aircraft they had that they might send in, or to do anything to the shipping that was around that might be of aid to the army that was on Iwo Jima. So our attack was mainly on into the airfields to see damaging or destroy as many aircraft as we could. On that trip, we didn't find any. We had no opposition from flying aircraft. We saw some flying around that apparently were trainers or certainly weren't combat aircraft. We managed to shoot down a couple of those because we were supposed to shoot at any target we could see, and an aircraft was a target. But most of it was strafing airfields and anything that might be a production to their war effort. We made two or three attacks, got some planes that we made. We're about to go back to the plane, to our carrier, but we said we'd had enough gas for one more trial, so away we bat back in. That was when we were strafing an airfield, and my memorable moment of that was just as we were pulling out, I felt my plane violently turn, and as I looked, I saw a pretty good-sized hole in my wing. Apparently a large anti-aircraft bullet or shell had gone through that. I realized I could still control the plane, even though with that damage to my wing, I had no control over my aileron for that craft, but I could still fly the plane. I didn't know how long I would, but anyway, we headed back to the carrier. I practiced landing with my gear down and looked like I could do it, so I managed to get it back on the plane. It wasn't a normal landing, but I made it safely. And they had the wing off and a new wing on, and the plane was usable before too long. But that was as close as I've come. The position of where it hit me was such that it didn't do any serious damage, but a few feet one way or the other, and I could have lost that wing because it would have taken away the control that holds out the wing. So I consider myself reasonably fortunate to still be here.
I'll say, and you described that so nonchalantly, so matter-of-factly, but that could have been it for you. We need to hear more about this after we get back from our first commercial break. There's a special souvenir connected to that story that you just heard. You can find a photo of it on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and you can hear 94-year-old Bob Bauer explain it when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. You know, one of the things I appreciate so much about the veterans we meet on Hometown Heroes is that they're real. A sincere and genuine spirit really makes an impression on me, and that's why I'm such a big fan of Educational Employees Credit Union. It was EECU that spearheaded the launch of Central Valley Honor Flight with an initial donation of close to $25,000, and the giving did not end there. More than 200,000 members know EECU represents smarter banking, but it's not just about being smart, it's about the heart. I've worked with the folks at EECU for years, and I've watched them put their money where their mouth is, supporting their credit union members right where they live in hometowns up and down Central California. From sponsoring first-class Educator of the Year ceremonies to taking the lead in sending World War II veterans on an unforgettable journey, my friends at EECU keep proving that you are at the heart of everything they do. Go to myeecu.org to see what EECU can do for you, or just walk into any branch. And while you're there, if you enjoy this show, tell them thanks for supporting Hometown Heroes.